This is Behind the Pixels.
I'm joined by Peter Claridge of Unmetric. Peter, thank you for joining us.
Not a problem. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, what is it you do for Unmetric?
Now, I'm the marketing manager for Unmetric. It's my job to make sure people actually know about the company, what we do, and also making sure we've got a lot of visibility, especially in the US.
Okay, well, let's dive straight in then. What does Unmetric do?
Unmetric, you can think of us as a social media analytics company. What we do is we provide this not-so-obvious competitive intelligence for big brands. So you've got plenty of websites around the world that are offering you, how many likes has your competitor got, how many followers has your competitor got. They do basic things like growth and stuff like that. What Unmetric does is we take a lot of this data, we do a lot of intelligent filters, we've got a lot of algorithms on there, we've got data analysts who are sitting opposite me right now, actually looking at all this data and trying to put up these insights into what the data actually means. So for example, if you said your Twitter account grew at 5% last month, I mean, in what context is that good? Is it good or is it bad? Unmetric has these sector-based benchmarks that tell you, okay, this is how fast you should be growing, this is how fast your sector is growing, this is how fast the region is growing. It kind of helps you know whether or not you're on the right track. Yeah, there's lots of different benchmarks around these metrics that you can use to say, okay, I'm doing a good job here.
Okay, and I think one of the ways you bring all that together, the how well you're doing geographically, how well you're doing in your business sector, etc., etc., you have something called the Unmetric score. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Unmetric score, it is a sector-based or sector-aware score. So that's what we found was, if you look at some of the other sites that provide data on what your competitors are up to, they often try to compare like an aviation brand like British Airways. They're comparing it to maybe Barclays Bank. Yeah, there's no way that you should be comparing like a bank to an airline. So what Unmetric has done is we've split everything out. We've categorized all the brands into their respective sectors. And then we calculated a score out of 100. And that goes for Facebook, it goes for YouTube, Twitter, and Pinterest. And we basically take a lot of metrics. Unfortunately, the actual metrics is proprietary at the moment. We are looking to open up that score. We get all these metrics, combine it, weight all the everything into a single benchmarkable score. You can look at, and it's updated once every month, so you can look at your score. Okay, this month I scored 80. That's much better than what my competitor's doing. It gives a very quick snapshot of what your social media performance is doing. I've got a couple of good examples of how we know the Unmetric score is working. For example, last year, Orion, they made a post about gay pride, and they posted a cookie, a rainbow-colored cookie, and I think the internet just blew up with people talking about this, and was it a good thing, was it a bad thing? And Orion, they've always been number three, number four behind Coca-Cola in our score, and then the following month, they shot up to number one, because they've grown faster, they got better engagement, there's better sentiment on their Facebook page. So we kind of knew that the score's working as it should be doing. Another example was Red Bull. Again, when they dropped a man from space, the following month their score shot up because they got a lot of publicity, a lot of people talking about them on their Facebook page, a lot of people talking, retweeting them on Twitter and stuff. So yeah, we're quite confident that the score is an accurate reflection of the social media performance across the social networks.
Now, you say the Unmetric score is based on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Pinterest. Why did you choose those channels specifically?
Well, first of all, Facebook is the largest social network around. I think 1.1 billion people is the most recent quoted figure. Twitter, because that was the second. And then we were listening to customer feedback. So originally we always thought that Google Plus would be our next social network to add. But you know, just based on customer feedback, based on what people were saying, there was just no interest at all on Google Plus. There was more interest on YouTube. So we added YouTube, and then we thought, okay, let's do Google Plus now. And that was when Pinterest suddenly appeared on the scene, and everyone wanted to know what are these brands doing on Pinterest that's so amazing? What can I do on Pinterest that's going to resonate with the community on there? So we ended up adding Pinterest, and now the customers, they're asking for LinkedIn, and also we're seeing some traction with Vine and Instagram. So Google Plus keeps getting pushed back. Although I think eventually we will add Google Plus, because I think some brands are starting to take it seriously. A lot of brands realizing that actually the SEO benefits of being on Google Plus, doing something interesting on Google Plus is useful.
I think, I mean, that's an interesting point you make about Google Plus being pushed back. And it sounds as if it's in response to what your customers and what companies are asking for information on, and they're not putting much stock in Google Plus at the moment. It's interesting, of course, because is it something like 250 million people are on Google Plus? Just curious, how do you then take that score and help companies recognize whether or not it is actually a genuinely valuable return on their time investment and their money investment in social media? Or is that something you're less concerned about? Your job is just to show kind of results?
For Unmetric, I mean, we're not so tightly integrated into brands' campaigns that we can tell them the return on investment. One decision that Unmetric took at the very beginning is that we're only going to use publicly available data. So while there are companies that I know of that will do a deep dive into your Facebook insights and make lots of pretty charts based on your insights, or maybe they're tied in with your Bitly account, pulling data from your API there and then integrating with maybe Google Analytics, and so you're able to monitor at least the digital spend for that campaign. And Metric, we only take the publicly available data, so it's very difficult for us to say you're getting a return on investment, because we're not looking at your bottom line. We don't know what money you put into the campaign or anything like that. One area which I would say brands could monitor their return on investment is perhaps if they're outsourcing the social media to an agency, and if that agency is saying that we're doing a great job, how do you know that they're actually doing a great job? By using Unmetric, the brands can monitor the performance and benchmark it against their competitors. So they know that, okay, we're paying the agency X amount of dollars, and we're not doing as well as the other three competitors in our industry. In which case, there might be time to move to a different agency. Another way that you can actually use Unmetric to gauge return on investment, perhaps, or maybe just making business decisions, is a lot of social media, especially on Twitter, is becoming a customer support. A lot of people are tweeting brands and expecting response, expecting help. And if you're not replying to these people fast, then it could cause some problems to your reputation, you get frustrated. So one way you can sort of say, okay, we need more people on our account, or we need to invest more on our account, is are you providing as good customer service on social media as your competitors?
That's an interesting point, because I'm one of those people who does exactly what you've just said. I will go online either with a compliment or a problem or a complaint. And it's interesting to see which brands respond and how they respond as well, because some brands will actually respond behind the faceless facade of a corporate Twitter handle. And then some companies have actually decided, well, they're going to add a face to the brand. So an example that I can give is Vodafone here in Ireland, where if you tweet, you'll get a message back from Aoife at Vodafone. Now, whether Aoife is several people or one person, I don't know, but it gives you that idea, at the very least, that you're talking to a human being rather than just a faceless Twitter handle. Have you any idea? I mean, I'm just curious, in your professional capacity, which companies that you see engaging on those four platforms that you follow intensely that have impressed you, that you think, wow, now these people are really switched on and they're really using these platforms in a way that's quite impressive?
I think that's quite a loaded question. We monitor 10,000 brands, and I can tell you that there's probably several thousand that you can call up and say, wow, they're doing a very, very good job. I mean, there's some obvious examples like Oreo. Oreo's always being held up and saying, wow, look at this. They've just tweeted about the Royal Baby. Wow, look at this. They tweeted about the blackouts. But there's also a lot of brands that I think should get more recognition than they actually do. So, for example, if you take American Airlines, for example, they reply to something in the region of 15,000 tweets every month. And each tweet is replied to within an average of 15 minutes. And it's not just a basic reply, like an auto reply, like, oh, thank you very much, or we're sorry for the inconvenience. It's actually a well thought out reply. So if somebody has missed their connecting flight, they can tweet to the @AmericanAirlines Twitter handle. And they get a reply that says, okay, you need to go see this person at this gate or this person at this check-in desk, and they will be able to help you from there. Another example is on the Twitter support is Target. Whenever you tweet Target, they'll assign you a unique ID number so that if you ever had to call their call center, you can quote the unique ID number. And they've got all the details about your complaint, about your tweets. They know, they don't have to ask you what's going on. If you look at Facebook, you have a company called, you have the beverage Dr. Pepper. They've got a crazy content strategy on Dr. Pepper. I mean, everybody says you must do visual, you must be very visual. Dr. Pepper actually taken a contrarian approach, and a lot of their content is just a single line of text saying things like, hands up, who can do with a Dr. Pepper right now? And they get phenomenal amounts of engagement. And they mix that with some visual stuff, which is very cartoony. It's all very rooted in the brand, and it gets a lot of shares from that. If you look at, for example, maybe GoPro. GoPro is an example of a brand. It's an extreme sports camera brand. What happened was the guy realized, hey, I need a way to take a video of me surfing. And over many iterations, they created this GoPro camera, which is used by a lot of the extreme sports, I'd say athletes, but I think they're more crazy people that have no concept of fear. And yeah, they go jumping off cliffs, they jump out of planes, they do all kinds of crazy things. They get their community to upload their videos, and they use it on YouTube, they put it on their Facebook, they tweet it out on Twitter. I could go on. Like I said, there's so many examples. I've got another four or five examples of brands that could really do something exceptional.
Well, that's interesting in its own right that, if that's the case, and you actually mentioned, you know, you could come up with maybe, you know, several hundred, a thousand examples. And that's a really interesting thing itself, because it does show how important brands now are seeing social media and how much they are investing in it. And I'm curious, do you see much original content then that brands are putting out, or is it that they are going out and engaging with people, answering questions, commenting on the news of the day? Can you give us an idea maybe of where the split lies, or is that just too obtuse and too nebulous to really give an answer to?
One of the things that we talk about at Ometric is the evolution of content generation. So if you go back 20 years ago, a company would create a TV commercial, and maybe they'll put an ad in the newspaper. And to actually go out and create that TV commercial would require a lot of time, a lot of effort. And that campaign might go on for several months. They might reuse a lot of the content. They might have that ad running for several weeks in the same newspaper. And then you had your, when the digital revolution came along, the internet came along, the amount of content required was reduced by a lot of people took up blogging, for example. And the amount of content they could create increased, but the length of the content was decreased. And now if you look at the social media space, you've got to get your message across in 140 characters or maybe a 30-second YouTube clip. And that means that the volume of content has increased exponentially, but the size of that content and the longevity of that content has reduced by a great amount. So if you look at a company like Red Bull, I would say Red Bull is less a an energy drink company that gives you wings and more of a publishing company.
That's interesting. That's interesting because you can tie in with that, of course, their own extreme sports events like the aerobatics events that they do and the diving, the high diving that they do off cliffs and that sort of thing. That is, of course, content that gets broadcast as sports content, as sports programs. But at the same time, it's infused with their brand, and their brand is all over it. So that's that is a very interesting point.
I don't take any credit for this, but a saying I just heard recently was in marketing, they've always said tell a story, and now I think what they're saying is be the story, which I think Red Bull is living up to that.
That's incredible. Well, actually, and that I'm sure answers one of the questions I have. I was going to ask you, what three tips do you have? Well, I think we've got one already. Instead of telling the story, be the story. What other tips would you have for companies to engage or to increase their engagement and improve their engagement online?
I think, first of all, you have to be visual. I mean, there's very, very few companies that are able to be non-visual and still get incredible amounts of engagement. I gave the example of Dr. Pepper earlier, and also there's another company, Skittles Candy. They come out with some truly bizarre stuff. You just have to look at their Facebook page to understand what I mean by that. But by and large, you've got to be visual, and that doesn't mean taking an image from stock photo website and putting it up. It means creating your own content, which is shareable. At the end of the day, being a brand, what you want is for your content to spread. What content spreads is something that people feel happy about putting on their wall. Because if they're going to share your content, it's got to resonate with them. They've got to be proud to share maybe that photo or maybe that image. I think that's why a lot of quotes do very well, although that gets overused. But something that's funny, I mean, if you take Pringles, for example, they do a lot of content or create a lot of very visual artwork using their trademark cylinder products or packaging. And just doing lots of funny things with that. For example, there's a cereal in America, it's called Kix. And they use their cereal to create all kinds of different arts and crafts. And they share those photos on their Facebook page. And they get shared by moms all across America. So, yeah, be visual, but not stock photos. Come up with something a little bit better, which does require time, effort, and, of course, money. I think another tip would be finding the right balance on content. Again, if you take someone like Oreo, they talk about themselves nonstop, but they found that balance to incorporate their brand into pop culture and what's happening at the moment. What we find at Unmetric, what we do is when we look at the content, we say, is it about the brand? Is it about the sector? Or is it about general happenings? Or is it about something else entirely? So generally, the brands that are doing the best have quite an even balance or the right balance across these different sections. So yes, talk about your brand, but also talk about what's happening within your industry. I don't try and capitalize on news too much. For example, we did an article about newsjacking. You know, is it worth actually doing newsjacking as a method to increase your virality, increase your followers? And we found it was something like 0.8% increase in followers, which means that if you get it wrong, as many brands have done, it could backfire quite spectacularly.
And that sounds like an awful lot of effort for very little increase, 0.8%. So maybe not the best place to be going. Just a last question, Peter. Maybe you have a sense of this. I don't know. What do you feel is maybe the coming thing? What do you feel in your bones? What does Unmetric sort of feel in its water is going to be an important thing for us to be looking at in the near future, or right now, in fact, be it a method of communicating, an up-and-coming channel, something like that?
So one thing, every week on Metric, we put out a podcast which does a roundup of what the brands are doing, what big brands are doing around the world, and also what platform updates there are. I think one thing that we're seeing more and more of is this cross-platform integration. What used to happen was you did an update on Facebook, and then you try and figure out how to cut that update down and put it on Twitter, and then you put the exact same update on Google+, and then YouTube you would forget about because it's too difficult to make a video. What we're seeing now is a lot more of this cross-platform integration. One example I saw last week was Lexus. They used Facebook and Twitter to say, hey, if you want to be part of a new advert, get in touch with us. And they used Twitter to spread words about this event that they were doing. And then they got something in the region of 300, 400 people that came all across America just to be part of a Lexus advert. And they didn't really know what they were supposed to be doing, but it turned out that they wanted everybody to take an Instagram picture of the new Lexus model. And then when they put all the photos together into a movie, it was like a stop motion video of this Lexus car, which was racing around the track. And so they combined, by combining Facebook, they combined Twitter, they combined Instagram, and obviously the video ended up on YouTube. They combined everything together to create this campaign. And I think that's something we're going to see a lot more of. I think Honda was putting out that if you tweet a certain hashtag, they will create a custom 6-second Vine video for you, which again is an integration across platforms. I think that platforms are going to be used in the way they were probably originally designed to be used. I mean, a lot of people used Twitter just to broadcast content. I think now it's becoming more about the two-way conversation. A lot of brands who are publishing their content on their Instagram account, now it's about getting people to actually publish their content on their Instagram account. Also with YouTube, maybe, again, YouTube has become like the repository for your TV commercials, which is great if you've got like a Samsung ad, which is really funny. But a lot of brands, like especially again, I'm coming back to Red Bull, they do videos which are 5-10 minutes long and have some amazing stuff. One video I just saw today actually was Samsung in Malaysia. They've created webisodes just using the Samsung camera. It's like a story about a boy and a girl and their breakup and their makeup and everything like that. But everything's told from the point of view of the camera. So you're seeing the camera being dropped, but still being okay. You see like the two-way video conversation happening and it's okay. You see them like tweeting each other. You see them sharing stuff with each other. But it's all told within a 10-minute story. So I think, yeah, what we'll see is the platform being used in the way they were designed to be used rather than just a broadcasting platform.
And that in its own right is kind of interesting that we're almost finding our feet now where the platforms have been given to us. Then the first thing we did as a brand was go out there and just use them as another channel to advertise. And now it seems that we're starting to realize, oh, actually, do you know what? There are actually better ways to use these channels, better ways to connect with people and actually have a meaningful engagement. That's all really, really fascinating and interesting. Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you so much for your insights. Anybody listening to this who is kind of curious about Unmetric now, where can they go? Where can they hear your content? Where can they find out about you?
So we're located at unmetric.com. That's where we've got our website. That's where we also have a blog, which we put out a lot of content. We're also on SlideShare. So if you wanted to have a look at some of the reports we put out about these brands, about their campaigns, about some sector analysis, we're on SlideShare. You just need to search for Unmetric on that. Also, we have our podcast on iTunes. Like, once again, you can search for Unmetric. It's basically a weekly roundup of what these brands are doing on social media.
Peter, thank you so much for your time.
No problem, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Behind the Pixels is produced by The Digital Storyteller.